Welcome to the program. We've got Tony Gosling coming in hot from Bristol, England. Welcome, Tony Gosling.
Hi there, George, again.
Boy, how are you? And, boy, there's a lot going on out here. You were mentioning earlier something about Ukraine. What's happening over there? Any assassinations or what?
Well, there has been now several particularly nasty assassinations. I mean, what's happening is because the Minsk agreement has been actually pretty successful in drawing borders, there has been a pretty much a successful ceasefire for a long time in Ukraine. Only over the last month or so, there have been several assassinations of military commanders in the Donbass, that's Novorossiya, some people call it, which is this area of southeastern Ukraine, which is staunchly pro-Russian. I mean, it's worth looking at what caused this whole kind of uprising in the first place. Yes, there was a lot of money going in from George Soros to encourage people and through civil society groups, and there was a lot of activity of the far right with Andriy Poruby, and he was running the Maidan protests, and many now say that, including a former prime minister of Ukraine, that Poruby and the far right were actually using special forces to do the sniping, which actually happened, you know, caused the coup. That's another bit of news which has come out recently, which has not been covered at all here in the West. I think it is Sputnik, you'll find that particular article. But, you know, when a former head of state is saying that there was a coup, there were snipers brought in by the far right into our capital that were killing civilians, then you would think that the West would be interested in news like that, but they weren't. No coverage at all, effectively, and he was, you know, the former prime minister of Ukraine. So the other on the other side of the fence, that is to say, in the Donbass region,
right,
which is really its own country now. It's got its own, you know, whole administration where they have military commanders there. They have a whole military system set up. And there's two or three of those just over the last couple of weeks have been just either blown up in car bombs, assassinated in the street, etc. So there's quite obviously an infiltration of that part of the Ukraine going on by special forces from Kiev of some kind, or possibly another NATO country, and a dirty war. So the Minsk agreement, they're trying to tear it up from Kiev.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you what, that area, and how does Turkey figure into this situation right now? What is their stance? And have you heard anything about Turkey and Erdogan?
Yes, I do, George. I was on the telly in Turkey a couple of weeks ago, and I'm in touch with the Turkish TV channel.
Right.
The program is called Yazboz. It's Al-Ahaber, A-H-A-B-E-R. And it's well worth watching because Sybil Edmonds is appearing on the same show as me there, actually.
Okay,
talking about the Operation Gladio. And, of course, the Turks, many of the Turks have known this for a long time, but what the big change is one of the major TV networks starts to talk about the use of these stay-behind special forces, far-right groups, which are effectively little cells, to foment terror and then to blame it on whoever it is you want to blame it on. So these basically people who just disappear into the night. Sometimes they use patsies as well. But this is, you know, the old NATO strategy of tension. And I think this is dawning on the Turks more and more now that much of the terrorism that's been going on there hasn't been Islamic terrorism. It's actually been fomented via NATO. And this is bringing about a kind of, I think, a new sense of independence in Turkey, where they are saying, well, look, actually, no, we are not going to be anti-Russian. We're not going to be anti-NATO. We're going to be here in the middle. We're going to be us. We're going to be an independent country, and no one's going to stop us, which has actually been the role of Turkey for many, many years. Centuries, actually. You know, they have been, when it was the Ottoman Empire and since, have been a quite powerful independent force in between Asia and Europe, and in order to really stop this relentless, it seems, attempt over the centuries from Europe, I would say you're talking about the real rulers of Europe from behind the scenes, the secret societies, the Masons, etc., who are absolutely obsessed with trying to take over Russia, because Russia is not under their control. They're control freaks, I think, George.
Right. You know, now, you mentioned, and on your program this yesterday, you covered SITE. Tell us about SITE, all caps. And don't they put out a lot of propaganda about terrorism and stuff in the Middle East?
They certainly do. And Rita Katz is this lovely lady who lies through her teeth. She has connections back to Tel Aviv and to the Mossad, and she's based in Bethesda, Maryland. She charges news organizations £25,000 a year to subscribe to our service. Lowly people like you and I, George, can only read the first paragraph or so, or maybe even less than that, of each article she produces. But these articles purport to come from various sources she's got, which are pinching emails, stealing information via the internet from directly from ISIS. Now, if you go to ISIS themselves, they deny any kind of connection. But the reason we're talking about SITE on our show is because 2 days last week, that's Tuesday and Thursday, the main news on all the bulletins was this guy from Manchester, Ronald Fidler, is his name. He's now taken on some kind of Islamic name, we're supposed to believe, who was sent to Guantanamo Bay, was there for a while. He went through what's called the Beatles system. And I don't know if you've heard about that, Guantanamo Bay, one of the Beatles crew, they call them.
Okay.
Where what they do is, they've been there, once people have been at Guantanamo for a while, then they put them in these quite comfy quarters, slightly separate from the, obviously, from the torture areas. And they separate them out into two different types of prisoners. One is the, what they call the Penny Lane prisoners, and the other is the Strawberry Fields prisoners. So the Strawberry Fields prisoners are the ones, as you might guess, who are going to be there forever, yeah?
Because, oh my gosh.
Forever, yeah?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And Penny Lane leads out into the outside world. So what they're basically doing is profiling and processing these individuals, most of whom have been illegally kidnapped, whatever, and brought to Guantanamo Bay. Well, none of them really were. It went through due legal process. It was basically like organized crime kidnapping these people. And what happens is they then get attempts made to persuade people to sort of toe the line, basically. If you do as we say, if you play along with us and have a few games with you, etc., then you can be released into the outside world. And it's surprising the number of people who are in key positions in groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS, Al-Shabaab, etc., Al-Nusra, have been through the Beatles crew system.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And been locked down Penny Lane. It's amazing that they use these kinds of terms. But anyway, the reason I mention this is because this has made the bulletins all over Britain. All the newspapers, TV, radio, for pretty much two solid days last week. And the evidence that they're basing it on, well, it's all based on Rita Katz. It's all based on the SITE intelligence group in Bethesda, Maryland, around the corner from the NRA, I think it is, or at least it's one of those big intelligence organizations, literally just around the corner from our offices. And the evidence presented on our screens, George, well, it was that a hill is shown, a piece of film, and then a little puff of smoke coming up from behind the hill. Then we're expected to believe, as viewers and listeners in the public, that that was him blowing himself up now in Iraq. So this whole series of him going to Guantanamo Bay, the Rodney Fidler, then getting £1 million compensation apparently from the British government, a great hoo-ha over that, it's all come from this SITE intelligence group. And nobody also seems to notice that even if SITE are telling the truth, which is extremely unlikely they are, the source of this information is ISIS. So what on earth are our journalists and our editors and our newspapers doing, basing a supposed solid news story, which is dominating the news for 2 days, on information from ISIS, without questioning it? Unbelievable, George, really. And I think we're entering a real sort of super fake news phase here. It's quite obvious to me that's why they brought this whole thing of fake news up, is because they know that they're going to be accused of this.
Right, exactly. Now, you also covered some USB information about the bank there in Switzerland and Birkenfeld and all that. You really cover a lot on your program.
It was a big show. Yeah, we're looking basically at the links between the way Switzerland has been being used over the centuries, really. I mean, actually, no, more decades.
Oh, yes, yes, there's a history there. Yeah,
there's a load of history, because Ian Fleming, the author, went to Switzerland at the end of the Second World War wanting to know what was going to happen with all this Nazi money. And, well, the Swiss said to him, well, it's going to stay with the signatories. You know, you can't have it. And so he found out that the main signatory was this guy, Martin Bormann, who was Hitler's Gauleiter, well, they call him, kind of treasurer. And so the British went in and kidnapped Bormann right at the end of the Second World War with a troop of commandos led by Fleming and by a guy called John Ainsworth Davis. This is all written up in the book OpJB. But the amazing thing is OpJB, there's been loads of attempts to try and discredit it, spoil books written by people, including Jerome Corsi, by the way, trying to say that Hitler survived. Bormann didn't survive. Hitler survived. You know, this is all spoilers. And the same exact thing is happening today with the Swiss, yeah, because the British did get the money, most of the money from the Second World War that the Nazis had through Bormann's signatures. And it meant a lot of people down in South America then had access to it. A lot of the money was then also laundered through Sullivan and Cromwell's law firm. So the Brits and the Americans, the traitors really, really sold their souls at the end of the war to get their hands on some of this Nazi loot and give safe passage to war criminals like Bormann, who was tried in absentia. And, you know, so that today translates into secret funding for ISIS from the CIA, but mostly from Kuwait and countries like Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, George. I mean, it's absolutely horrendous that the Swiss are allowed to get away with hiding these bank accounts. One of the things we found out was that you can't get a balance if you've got one of these Swiss accounts. You have to pay the guy to fly over to see you with an encrypted laptop. He will open up his laptop, put the code in so you can see what your balance is, then he'll close the laptop and fly back to Switzerland. That's how secretive they are.
Yeah, I interviewed Birkenfeld a few weeks ago on his book, Lucifer's Banker, and my final question to him was, okay, if you close down the Swiss secret accounts, don't they pop up somewhere else, anywhere like Singapore or Hong Kong or something? See what I mean? So they just moved them to other places. That were,
well, what was his answer? Yeah, there are lots of places now to be these tax havens, aren't there?
Yeah, Tony, he agreed. So actually, he closed down a bunch in Switzerland and made a fortune. He made a fortune from IRS, okay? They paid him over $100 million in fine. And
I loved it. He was saying that he used to get a bit nervous when he visited the United States.
But anyway, and you're covering, I have your homepage here, you know, online right now, looking at what you covered just this Friday. My gosh, Tony, you covered the waterfront.
We've everything, and of course there's more news today with these various fake news, or at least I don't know if you can call them that, the New York Times, CNN and the BBC, the Daily Mail, all banned from the press briefing at the White House. Now, this is almost like, hang on, last days of Rome time, because this is not acceptable in a democracy to be banning your news networks from covering what's going on with the government. Yeah, so I saw that the Associated Press and Time magazine actually, I think, wisely boycotted the briefing, saying, well, look, if you're going to stop any of these news organizations going in, you're going to stop all of us going in, or at least those two. And now I know a lot of people are fed up with a lot of these news organizations. They don't think they tell the truth, but they are there serving a role to ask difficult questions. And I pointed out on a Press TV interview I did that we had under the Obama regime the most awkward questions you could possibly imagine being pitched to the White House by Russia Today's Garner Chichikan almost daily in those press conferences. And yes, that is what they're for, awkward, difficult questions. And if the President Trump has the courage, he should be able to take these questions face on, and not to say, sort of turn around like a big corporate boss would be able to do, and just say, well, I'm going to exclude you from the conference. You know, there's a lot of people in the United States, 320 million people this guy is representing, and some of those people will be watching those networks. So it's just, I don't think in any way acceptable to be on public money excluding any news organization that wants to cover what's going on in the country, that wants to cover the White House, to exclude them at all. Because journalists are under enough of attack as it is, without the, you know, people who are critical of the president, maybe even take the mickey out of him. I mean, Sean Spicer, for example, he keeps coming up with bits of fake news, and I imagine there'll be quite a lot of people watching Saturday Night Live to see in what way they're going to take the mickey out of these people. But they just have to accept that as a public figure, they're going to be lampooned, they're going to be satirized, and they just have to take it on the chin.
Well, you know, CNN, though, and some of these other people, you talk about fake news. They've been lying about things, Tony. They're actually publishing lies out here now about Trump and his administration at times. So there's two sides to this story, see?
I know. And you know what happens with news organizations that consistently publish lies? Is they get found out and people don't trust them anymore. So they will be shooting themselves in the foot, just as I think... Just as I think Donald Trump has shot himself in the foot by banning these news organizations from the conference.
Yeah, Stephen Cohen recently was on Coast to Coast the other night, and he's a Russian expert. He says coming out of the Times, the New York Times, are stories where they're making all of these allegations, and in the middle of the story they're saying that these have not been confirmed yet. So, I mean, it's gotten way... This whole thing is blowing up. You know.
Well, do you remember earlier in the month when we had Sean Spicer saying that an Iranian ship had attacked a U.S. Navy ship, and it turns out that actually it was nothing of the sort. It was the Houthi rebels firing at a Saudi ship. You know, so they really have got to get their hand, you know. They can't just make things up in these press conferences. They have to actually be based in reality. And it seems there's a bad relationship between the intelligence services, the FBI, etc., and the White House. And they need to get that sorted out so they're not just all at sea making stuff up. And, I mean, what it does show you, I think, in a wider view, is that you've got a permanent government in Washington and in the United States, which are the people that are never elected. This is the secret state, the deep state.
Exactly.
And Trump is not getting on very well with the deep state.
No,
it's a good thing. You know, he should be upsetting the deep state. But as a result, he shouldn't be thrashing out at the press, because he needs to keep them on side in some way or another, even if they are lying. And if they are lying, they are basically destroying their own credibility. Let them do that. Just leave them to lie, leave them to do their own self-destruction. And actually, he could do his own version of Saturday Night Live, couldn't he? Take the mickey out of them live in a press conference.
Right. You know, hey, Tony, you know, one of the things that is happening there, that was not a normal press conference, by the way. That was a closed door. Yeah, that was a briefing. That wasn't the normal a daily press conference. They didn't have one that day because of the conservative political action conference. But, you know, they're allowing now, they're opening it up to some alternative press in there now, and that's what they've never done before.
Well, they should. I mean, you know, all you basically need is some press credentials, and you can go in and cover anything here. I mean, here we are in the city of Bristol. In fact, they generally let anybody just walk off the street. Members of the public can come in too. But I mean, I would imagine for something to do with central government, you just need a press card. Basically, any kind of press will be allowed in there. Even bloggers can arrange to get a press card, so they can come in too.
Hey, you know what I found the other day, though, over in Cambridge, was that Conspiracy and Democracy, they're funding a big project over there, and they're trying to say that conspiratorial theorists are a threat to democracy.
Well, actually, I think there is a whole origin around this term conspiracy theory, as we know, dreamt up by the CIA, basically aimed at Mark Lane, who was finding out
the CIA
were behind the killing of Kennedy, and so they came up with this whole term to try and discredit him, effectively. But as we know, there's been a complete destruction in the West of proper investigative journalism. We even had to have George Al Jazeera come over here to do an investigation into the Israelis here in London, at the Israeli embassy, who weren't even on the official diplomatic lists.
Right.
They were going around trying to take out British defence ministers and had a £1 million slush fund to try and undermine any kind of criticism of the Israelis within the Labour Party opposition. You know, these massive slush funds are, it's totally illegal what they're trying to do, and also none of the British press did any kind of investigation. It took Doha, Qatar, to actually come into London and film these guys in restaurants plotting to overthrow people, British government ministers, and that's because there's no proper investigative journalism going on at all anymore. It's all been squashed. We're getting into a stage, I think, where, you know, it's going to be just corporate announcements, and the press is not questioning what government says. Even basic things, like I said earlier, with this guy, a puff of smoke behind a hill. You expect us to believe that's this guy blowing himself up as a suicide bomber? Well, there's no evidence at all, and yet this is the main item on the bulletins. So we're getting into quite a surreal world.
Oh yeah, we are, aren't we? Anyway,
it's actually really worrying. What it makes me think, George, is that, you know, there could be war brewing, because this is the sort of thing when you start to get such appalling coverage by the mainstream press. I'm not excusing the mainstream press at all. I think Donald Trump is right to have a go at them in every way he possibly can, but not to exclude them. I mean, that just seems, you know, childish, actually.
Right.
Because they don't want criticism. I mean, you know, that's what we need. We need good quality criticism, good quality journalism. That's the way we stay safe, and that's the way that the populations in the democracies, where we hope we live in a democracy anyway, that's how they make the decisions about what they're going to do with their lives, and we need to preserve that as much as possible.
Okay, well, Tony, thank you. We've got to get off the air, but thank you very much this evening for this interview. Appreciate it.
God bless, George. Lovely to speak to you. I'm off to New Zealand for a month or so maybe I'll speak to you from there when I'm over there. Who knows?
Do that. Get me a contact. We'll get there. Okay. Thank you.
Cheers, George.
Cheers. Bye-bye.